Hey, it's Mike Simpson here. There are always what-ifs that you're trying to guard against, and I want to tell you about Equity Protect, because what if you lost your home not to some kind of natural disaster or a fire, but to title theft? Your homeowner's insurance won't cover you. The monitoring services, they can't stop it. But Equity Protect, they can. You're thinking, is title theft real? Yeah, it is. Criminals can forge documents and steal properties. They try to do it all the time. That's why you need to call Equity Protect at 866-485-1834. What they have is their patented smart policy that protects your homeownership from cybercrime, from fraud, and they've been all over the place, and maybe you've seen them on Forbes, Fox News, MSNBC, USA Today. You can check out their reviews on Google, on the BBB, 866-485-1834, 866-485-1834, equityprotect.com. All the info's right there for you. And protect your home today. EquityProtect.com, 866-485-1834, 866-485-1834.
For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners and learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Texting terms at unlock.com/SMS. Privacy policy at unlock.com/privacy-policy. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Terms and conditions apply. For full details, see unlock.com/legal. After portrayal.
Lisa, thanks for having me over. Your new kitchen is gorgeous. How'd you find the money to do it?
We worked with this great company, Unlock. They help you unlock the future value of your home to get the cash you need today.
So it's a home equity loan?
No, it's not a loan at all. There's no monthly payments and no interest charges ever. And you can use the money however you want. We were able to redo our kitchen and pay off our credit card debt.
Wow, Jack and I could really use this to finally pay off our old student loan debt. How do I get started?
It's easy. Just go to their website.
Text EQUITY to 865-865 to unlock the value in your home and get up to $500,000 in cash with no monthly payments and no interest ever. Pay off debt, improve your home, add to your retirement fund. It's up to you. Text EQUITY to 865-865. Text the word EQUITY to 865-865. Text EQUITY to 865-865 now.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Blues in action tonight in Winnipeg. The Cardinals in Atlanta. We had a great conversation with Mr. Cusumano in the last hour. I'm a little nervous about this Blues game tonight, but we'll have more coverage of that, obviously, tomorrow. A little bit later in the show, before Audio Cut of the Day, J. Peter Zane will be here, who writes for Real Clear Investigations. So a week ago, I saw this piece that was in the Free Press, and the gang, I'm a fan of Barry Weiss and everything that they've done over at the Free Press. I think many of you know that, but they introduced a piece by David Zweig, which actually is a portion of his book this way, and I'm going to use their intro because I think it's important here, especially when they talk about the media. They say, during the pandemic, most of the media turned its back on its core obligation to question authorities and instead became their mouthpiece. David Zweig was one of a small band of journalists who kept demanding proof about our COVID policies and whose reporting challenged the rationale for lockdowns. We're proud to publish some of David's breakthrough findings during the pandemic, and we're delighted to present this adapted excerpt from his book. And his book is called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, the Virus, and a Story of Bad Decisions. As good as that adapted excerpt was, we can do one better here because we have David as a guest on 97.1 FM Talk. David Zweig, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I have to thank you for reaching out to me on Friday because you kind of beat us to the punch, as I indicated in my message. Jen Say was a guest on Thursday. We were talking about your book. Look, candidly, this is a topic that is really, really something that's important to me. I've been passionate about it for a long time. And every time I read more and more things, especially things from your book, I'm just stunned by some of those decisions from 5 years ago, David.
Yeah, it is one of those things that the more you learn, that the more unsettling it should become to most people. And that's what I try to do with my book, is that there really is this kind of revisionist narrative that's being put out now, and that's been perpetuated for quite some time. This idea of, well, initially during the pandemic, as you surely remember, they said all these school closures and all sorts of this other interventions were necessary. Then, once it became so obvious that this was ridiculous and was harmful, the narrative changed. Then it was, well, look, we kept schools closed too long. It's regrettable, but this was an understandable decision. It was a time of chaos. Everyone was afraid. the purpose, one of the main purposes of my book is to show that that is a complete lie.
Yeah.
This is like very conveniently exculpatory. But what I do in the book is show in like a chronological, in real time, what was known at any given moment. And it is completely false that this was sort of a just a regrettable but understandable decision. Very early, we knew that schools were safe to open because millions and millions of children went back to school in Europe at the end of April and the beginning of May. And I go through in great detail in the book, that's kind of like the original sin, where that information was ignored, or if it was acknowledged, it was dismissed through any number of phony excuses about why, you know, Europe, we were supposed to just ignore what was happening there.
So you have an interesting juxtaposition, and this was in the excerpt that was in the Free Press. On the same day, on May 5th of 2020, there is a COVID beat reporter for The Times, Apurva Mandavelli, who writes an article, and the headline is, "Cases could soar in many U.S. communities if schools reopen soon." And then on the same day, there's a British medical journal known by BMJ that publishes a piece called "Children Are Not COVID-19 Super Spreaders, Time to Go Back to School." I want you to kind of explain why those two stories are so important on that day.
I mean, nothing better typified the sort of hysteria and like craziness amongst the American media versus the more measured approach that you saw abroad. Then like these two articles about schools came out on the exact same day. You have the New York Times, you know, basically telling everybody, you know, your hair is on fire, you know, everyone hide in the basement. And then on the very same day, you have a scholarly journal in England saying, it's fine, send the kids back, they're not super spreaders, you know, everybody just calm down. And it's hard to imagine a more perfect example of how poor of a job the legacy media did in America during the pandemic. And I cite some studies on this in the book. This isn't just my opinion. There's out of Dartmouth, some researchers use this analysis where they can detect tone and content in news articles. And they found, sure enough, that the coverage in the United States was far more negative, far more inflammatory than we saw outside the United States. And this was especially so when it came to children and schools. So it's no wonder that a significant portion of the country was freaked out, was terrified, and actually thought this was a good idea. Well, it's because they were deeply, deeply misinformed by both our public health officials and worse, by the media that simply repeated what these officials were saying instead of ever asking for evidence behind their claims.
So, you know, that was a year that was interesting for me because my daughter, who is now in fourth grade, was about to start kindergarten. I remember having a lot of conversations in that summer about getting kids back to school. But I don't remember this. You highlight something, and this happened apparently in June of 2020 when the Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Pediatrics, released a guideline. And they argue, open up the schools. They say all policy considerations for the coming school year should start with the goal of having students physically present in school. The importance of in-person learning is well documented. And they kind of go on in that statement. Now, maybe I did talk about that at the time, but what I remember from June and July of that year is the teachers picketing in Detroit and elsewhere saying, if you open up the schools, you're going to kill the kids. There were people holding those signs on picket lines. So much of the media coverage was focused on the teachers and keeping people safe and all of these things that, again, I think you highlight in the book, to a certain extent, were much nonsense, much ado about nothing.
Of course. And, you know, this is, everyone knows that it bleeds, it leads. This is fear sells. And it's not just, you know, in something like the National Enquirer. This is in the New York Times and all the sort of prestigious media outlets in our country perpetuated fear on a level that we had never seen before related to children. They were these, you know, little miniature monsters who were going to kill everybody was essentially the narrative that was being put out. And unfortunately, the reality is that journalists typically are supposed to be skeptical of claims by those in power, skeptical of big business, of the government, the church, you know, all these like large institutions. Yet when it came to the pandemic, that skepticism vanished. And instead, they acted more just like a megaphone. And a lot of my book really is about trying to show the reader through, like, I guess what you would call a series of case studies, that you can see how these sort of gears are turning behind the scenes. And I even recount how I had written a big piece for the New York Times and how they cut a large part of my article that was devoted to evidence showing that schools were safe to open. And I interviewed some doctors who had recently published something in a medical journal, similar to that BMJ article that you were just talking about. And that got cut from the article. So it's really important for people to see how these decisions get made and to see how the media oftentimes works in conjunction with large institutions when it wants to, when they're on the same team or when they perceive it to be that way. And so by seeing all these examples, hopefully a reader comes away with having an understanding about how this stuff works so they're prepared for the next thing. And it doesn't have to be a pandemic. It doesn't even have to be health related, but there's always something going on. And this is a way to kind of like Plato's cave to figure out when you're looking at the shadows and when you're going to be looking at the real thing.
David Zweig is my guest. His new book is called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, the Virus, and the Story of Bad Decisions. It's interesting because you talk about, I know you just referenced this, the New York Times, but you're writing for some other publications. Wired was one of them. And you talk about a situation where 5 years ago, May, you're writing about this, you're offering some contrarian views, and you start to hear from some doctors, some people in the medical community out there, right?
That's right. So one of the things that I talk about in the book, and that the average person just had no way of knowing, is that once I started writing these, you know, pieces that were challenging the sort of orthodoxy and the establishment view, I started getting emails and contacted from people around the country, and including in that group of people who were contacting me were doctors and even former CDC officials. And these aren't just like a random pediatrician in, you know, in a suburb somewhere. We're talking about physicians at some of the elite university hospitals in our country. And they would reach out to me and say, hey, I just wanted you to know, I agree with you. I think what's happening with these school closures doesn't make sense. This is harming children. I don't think it's benefiting anyone. These mask mandates are silly. Whatever it may be, these pieces that I was writing that was challenging the establishment view, there were a group of doctors and others around the country who knew it was wrong, but every time they contacted me, they said, this is off the record. You please don't write about this, because they said their peers will, you know, this was just third rail. No one could talk about this at, you know, academic institutions or at hospitals. And in some instances, they were explicitly told by their bosses, by, you know, the administrators and such, you are not allowed to say anything that goes against the CDC. So what the average person doesn't realize is what we were told was this kind of, there's a consensus in America. That was false. This was a manufactured consensus. It was an illusion. The reality was there were many doctors who were against this, but they were either afraid to speak out or they were told they were not allowed to speak out. And I had this bizarre experience, which I recount in the book, about how I sort of was observing this alternate reality, but I couldn't tell anyone about it. But I knew this thing that everyone else seemed to believe wasn't true.
How do you communicate some of the points about the media when you do other interviews about this book? I'm very curious because, look, you have an empathetic voice here. You're telling me things that I knew. I didn't know the extremes, but we were talking about a lot of these things on this show. But you're going to go on CNN and some of these other, you know, outlets out there that were very complicit in a lot of this. Do they even recognize that, David?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what, you know, what they ask me. What I've told, you know, anyone who wants to interview me is, ask the hardest questions you can, like no softballs. Like I'm full confidence in everything I've written in this book. Not one article I've written has ever been retracted. There aren't any major corrections. That doesn't mean I don't make mistakes, but this book has been the result of years of research. I have hundreds of endnotes in this book. I try to do the opposite of what I'm criticizing all these media outlets for doing, which is they provided, in most instances, no evidence behind claims they were making. So I knew for sure if I was going to write something about this, I wanted to have backup. I wanted to have a source for every claim. So when people read this book, they're going to be like, holy beep, I can't believe what he just wrote. Wait a minute, the figures in this study are made up, or this, you know, there's so many I know we don't have a lot of time on the interview now. There are so many wild things that people will barely believe when they read them, but I give evidence behind all of them.
All right, give me one wild thing here without having read the book. Give me one wild thing that would kind of make someone's jaw drop.
Do you remember remember in the beginning of the pandemic, the like flatten the curve meme and all those like graphs they would show us? If everyone follows directions, then we'll like flatten the curve and it would show. There were these models that said how many people were going to die. Those models were based, at least in part, on completely made-up information. I dug deep down in one of the studies that the models were based on, way in its supplement, you know, on page like 35 or something. And deep down, it had something in there. It said one of the models is based on this idea that like something like 37% of transmission was occurring in schools. And I looked in, they said, this number was chosen arbitrarily. So I want your listeners to just like meditate on that for a moment. Our entire society was shut down. Children who were healthy kids were barred from school, many of them for more than a year. And all of this comes back to these models. This is what Deborah Birx, Anthony Fauci, all these people, I'm sure many of us can remember, you can visualize these, you know, the graph where they showed if you follow the instructions and stay home and the schools are closed, oh, look at this, and the cases are going to go down. In part, these models were made on fake information. And if you go all the way into the supplement, that's where you find the answers.
So how do you begin to even calculate the damage? For example, this is something I think most people would never think of. One of the consequences that you highlight here is there's a serious rise in child abuse, right? Because these kids are home and they're not in school.
It's wild. You know, in the beginning, and this was known, by the way, very early on, I think as early as April, they saw that reports of child abuse had dropped significantly. Now, someone might think, oh, that's wonderful. It's going down. Something strange has happened with the school closures and the lockdowns. No, what happened is that teachers and educators are oftentimes the first line of defense for a child who is at risk. That's where abuse is noticed. And what they found was that once they closed schools, all these kids had lost this such an important resource of help. And instead, they were basically locked at home with a monster. And the actual abuse to children went through the roof. And they knew this as early as April of 2020, and they didn't do anything about it. These kids were kept home for months, many of them, and some even as long as a year. And the public health authorities did nothing about it. Make no mistake, COVID would pose a smaller risk to children than any number of things that they face in a given day or given year. More kids die of drowning each year than they did of COVID in multiple years. More kids die in car accidents. More kids die from suicide. And including more kids die of the flu in several seasons in the 10 years leading up to the pandemic. None of this stuff was contextualized for regular Americans. I'm very sympathetic, even though I disagreed with them. I'm very sympathetic to some, fellow parents and Americans who felt like schools needed to be closed or they were terrified. Again, although I knew enough to disagree, I get it. They were misled.
Yeah.
They were given very bad information by both our government and by the media. And what my book, what I'm trying to do is create a historical record. When someone reads through this, their mind's going to like explode. When they actually learn what really happened, what information was really behind the scenes. And I go through and show throughout history how this is kind of how societies and how people in charge often act. And particularly with medicine, our intuitions about what we think is going to work, something that might seem obvious. Well, of course, if we close schools, that'll reduce cases. Or of course, if I have a mask in front of my face, that's going to reduce transmission. No. Over and over again throughout history, there are instances where things that seem incredibly obvious to doctors and to regular people turn out to not be so. But we didn't follow science during the pandemic. Instead, we followed people's intuitions instead of actually testing things and looking at actual evidence.
We kept people from going to the beach. You had people in New York City and Manhattan that were out for a jog, and if the other person didn't have a mask on when they were jogging or riding their bike, people would complain to authorities. Some of this stuff is just mind-numbing and mind-boggling, but a lot of that, I guess, to your point, goes to the psychology of the moment.
you? I mean, like, you're obviously someone who had a different perspective on this than so many people, particularly I live in a very sort of progressive area. And it's like, I don't think there is a sufficient, and I don't know if reckoning is the right word, but a sufficient acknowledgement of how radical this was, what we all went through. When I think back to 9/11, or I think back to the Iraq War and a variety of other things, to my mind, nothing was as crazy as the pandemic. And there's this sort of almost memory hole where people are like, oh, I don't want to think about that. I don't want to talk about that anymore.
You could not be more right. Yeah, you're right about that, though. It's weird.
It's so important that we not just, like, memory hole this thing. Something very, very crazy happened. Many people lost their minds. And the whole point of me writing this book is to show people what actually happened behind. How do the gears turn behind society? What is sort of like, how does decision-making happen? And show how does the media mislead people? And, you know, there's so much talk about, you know, right-wing propaganda, and there's talk about, you know, QAnon and Trump and this, that, and the other thing. But what we don't often hear about is how the legacy media itself is a perpetuator of misleading information very often. And I show how this happened to such a horrible degree during the pandemic. And the result was that millions, I mean, we have more than 50 million kids in our country, you know, like K to 12 kids. And they were harmed by this, and it was unnecessary because at the same time, there were tens of millions of kids in school in Europe, and they weren't wearing masks, many of them. They weren't doing 6 feet of distancing. They didn't have special HEPA filters, you know, cleaning the air in the school. All these things we were told that were critical. We can't open the school until they get a HEPA filter. We can't do it. You know, they have to be 6 feet of distancing. All of this was made up. We had evidence in real time. And ultimately, in red states in America, and as you probably know, none of them made out any worse than the places that were closed. The evidence shows this is, no one can dispute this. Florida turned out just as good as California in the end. Once you adjust for the age differences and a couple other factors, they were no worse off. Yet you had one state where kids couldn't go to school for more than a year, except for the governor. Newsom's children were in school because they were in private school. But all these other kids, particularly kids who didn't have money, they were out of luck. The schools and the kids, people couldn't go to church and all this stuff. And then you have a different state like Florida. Schools are open. You don't have to wear a mask. And guess what? They came out the same in the end. And we knew this while it was going on in real time, and it was ignored. Or if it wasn't ignored, then you were called an idiot or a fool or even worse for questioning any of this. And that's why it's so important to my mind what's in my book and how it creates a history and how I take the reader on this journey through where you actually are seeing what's going on. Like I was saying with the doctors, you know, contacting me privately, where I give all these pieces of information to reveal what actually was happening and how the gears turn.
It's so important, David. And, you know, you're talking to someone who is constantly and has for a couple of decades highlighted some of the media malfeasance. So that part of the lesson here resonates extremely well with the audience. The book is called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, the Virus, and the Story of Bad Decisions. My blood has been boiling just listening to the description. I'm sure I'm going to be angry, but it is important. And thank you for doing this book. And thanks for coming on and getting in touch. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. And anyone listening, I'm very easy to find online. Read the book. Reach out to me. Let's talk.
Thank you, David.
Thanks
we'll
for having
you.
Me.
That man, that's an incredible
wow
interview. And, you know, the topic is so important. And you know this, Sue, because I talk about this stuff all the time. And, you know, what one of the things I didn't even get to that he talks about in this book is that there are a lot of kids that just left schools, period. They just disappeared. They didn't go back to school in some of these urban districts.
Good grief.
Yep. We got J. Peter Zane coming up next, plus an audio cut of the day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework. Founded in 1964, Fremont Bank understands the difference 60 years can make. It's the difference between serving a family business and being dedicated to a family business as a family business. The difference between looking at spreadsheets and looking at possibilities. The difference between deposits that go into a vault and deposits that go back into your community. So what difference does 60 years make? All the difference in the world. Fremont Bank. Here for you. Here for good.
All right. Hey, don't forget, you can always check out the songs that we play for the bumper music at the end of the show. I put it up on the X, formerly Twitter, with a playlist from Spotify as well. And this is a great song from Brett Denon. I know Brett just a little bit. It's called Sweet Persuasion, but that is on the playlist for tonight. Audio cut of the day coming up. That was a hell of an interview with David Zweig. Let me just say this, because he brought the fire, and that book is really going to be something. I think I will read that book. You know me, Sue. I don't read a lot of books, right? My excuse is, and it's just an excuse, is, you know, I'm always reading things. My whole morning is reading content, etc. So I tend to listen to music and watch movies. But this is a book that I really want to check out for sure.
Good.
And it's called An Abundance of Caution, American Schools, The Virus, and A Story of Bad Decisions. You remember that summer, you know, leading
it. Oh,
well, you know what? You don't remember that with me as much, because that was when I was on KMOX. I kind of forget about this. I didn't start here until, you know, March of 21.
Oh,
so that entire summer of the first summer of COVID leading into the fall, I did my show from my studio at home. I taught kindergarten at the same time for a month. And I've said this in the past, in the defense of people around here, to David's point, we got back. Our kids got back to school a lot quicker than other parts of the country. So maybe we got a little lucky there. Hey, look who's back with us this afternoon. Peter Zane, editor at Real Clear Investigations. He writes for Real Clear Politics. I am very curious about his thoughts on a lot of things that have happened in Washington. Peter, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I read a review of Zweig's book. The Wall Street Journal had in their review section this weekend. The cover was about Joe Biden and the effort to pretend that he was a competent leader. And then inside, they had a piece on Zweig's book and another one that was basically how we were lied to regarding COVID for several years.
But you know what's interesting?
The truth can be told at long last.
It can, but Sue, one of the questions I had, you probably heard me ask David, because one of the big messages of that book, Peter, is the media and you know, how they were complicit in all this and they didn't do their job and they weren't skeptical. Now, look, that's a mantra that I've carried well beyond COVID on a lot of these stories, but I just wonder how much of the messaging on the media will resonate when he does interviews on the traditional, you know, outlets, if he's on the Today Show or whatever, because they're the ones that made this happen to a certain extent.
Yeah, it'll be completely ignored. And in fact, the Biden piece I blame and I don't blame the Democrats and the White House for pretending that this guy was competent. I mean, that's what politicians do, and they want to keep power. But where were the reporters who had access to him, who were observing him, who were not reporting on this? And the piece in the Wall Street Journal by the reporter who co-bylined the piece in July that sort of first said after he's out of the race, oh,
right,
he's, you know, not up to snuff, but never takes that into account. And I totally agree with you. Is anybody surprised that a politician or a political party would lie to you? That's like almost their job.
But you have a press. I think the answer to your question why the media didn't do their job is because of Trump. I mean, I think it was all because of Trump. Because if it was somebody else, maybe they would have poked around just a little bit more.
I think that the proof of that statement is COVID. Because he said X, so they say Y. If he had said, oh, you know, this was clearly started at that lab, at the wet market in China, and, you know, we can't hold them responsible, it just happens, they would have been hitting that lab leak. If he'd, you know, been supporting wearing the masks and the lockdowns, they would have been more suspicious of it. Because I can tell you, I was writing a column for a different publication at the time. I'm not a medical writer, and I wrote a bunch of columns because it was all out there, that lockdowns, the problems with education, masks, the problems with that. It's not that they don't completely work, but they don't work in the context in which they were insisting. And that was really the point, was like, you have to do this or you're a bad person and an enemy of the state.
One of my favorite stories from early on in COVID was, it was the first summer and a bunch of people here from St. Louis had gone to the Lake of the Ozarks, which is a couple hours away in the middle of the state. You know, people go there to party and fish and boat, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. And there was this outdoor bar, I can't remember the name of it, it's pretty popular there, mm-hmm, where people were partying. And then the story in our local newspaper, where we're in the middle of a crime crisis here and have been, people are getting murdered. The murder rate at that time was very, very high, you know, in 2020. And you had a situation where people just completely thought that the worst people on the planet, Peter, were those folks that might have gone to play outside and be in a pool at the Lake of the Ozarks. And how dare they come back here to St. Louis County and St. Louis City? I mean, it's comical. It's like a, you know, a bit for a sitcom, if you really think about it. But that's what we did.
You can't go to church and be socially distanced, but you can be packed next to people at protests where they're setting fire to things, and that's okay. That was where you just saw they don't care.
Yes.
They don't care what the evidence is. And, you know, in the latest column I wrote, all of these crocodile tears about, you know, the Maryland man who's in El Salvador. And believe me, I wouldn't want to be him, this illegal alien that was deported. But I mean, when Joe Biden allowed 8 to 10 million people, he said, come one, come all. The amount of human tragedy that attended those people, the human trafficking, the enrichment of cartels, the rapes along the path that were all sort of documented, not by the mainstream media so much, but they couldn't care less.
No.
So now you hear about this one guy here or this one guy there, and it's so cynical.
Thank you. You're absolutely right, because what I heard you describe there was exactly the playbook for COVID. All of these stories that happened. Look, Bill Malusian was standing out there with Chinese nationals, people from Somali, lined up to come into the country. Nobody covered that outside of Fox. No one wanted to talk about the human consequences. And even when Trump says they're eating the cats and dogs, nobody really wanted to go and say, hey, what the hell is happening in that community, right?
Exactly. And I mean, the children, I think they, how many did they lose? 80,000? I don't even know the number, but they just have disappeared. They don't know who they are. And we do know many children were placed with, quote, families or caretakers who just wanted to exploit them. And human activity always has errors. There are always bad guys. So to me, it's not, oh my God, you can only let people in if you have a perfect system. I mean, I'm just saying, if you just want to look at that one point, but it was their total lack of concern for those people.
I would agree.
For saying, yeah.
Absolutely. Peter Zane is with me. So let me kind of piggyback off of Abrego Garcia and get your thoughts just on the administration overall, because obviously you have a situation where that dominated the news cycle in the latter part of last week and continues right now. What's interesting to me is a lot of the DOGE stuff has kind of gone away. There's not as much focus on that because they want to, you know, do stories on the gangbanger right now. But any thoughts about how, and there was a poll, by the way, there's a poll that came out today from Rasmussen that showed overwhelming support for deporting people who are criminals in this country. Shocking. But, you know, the media doesn't seem to be ready to let this Abrego Garcia thing go wrong here or go away.
Well, I think that it's helpful to Democrats to raise money to bring lawsuits to try to kneecap the Trump administration. So, because really, if you are really an opponent of Trump, all I would be writing about is the economy. I mean, I voted for the guy, and whoa. Seems like a lot of self-inflicted pain here.
I have some concerns along those lines myself. Yes.
I mean, and again, you and I, who, you know, we're supposedly on a side, like, we'll say that. When do you hear a Democrat say, oh my God, that was insane what we did, you know, with letting 10 million people in?
Yeah, they really haven't. Except for John Fetterman. You know, he might be the only guy.
Yeah, but you know, and so my column was basically trying to give Trump credit, not so much for the execution of DOGE yet at this point, but at least reminding us we owe $37 trillion. And all of these programs that people depend on, unfortunately, but they do, are severely threatened. And we have just believed in magical thinking, you know, all of us in this country. And I don't know if he has the will and the tenacity to follow through and actually try to get our fiscal house in order. But I think he deserves credit for at least addressing, bringing up, you know, a discussion about how messed up all the government accounting is and how we're spending money, which, by the way, 70% of it is the Great Society, New Deal, Social Security, Great Society, Medicaid, and Medicare. And the left never owns that either. We're going broke because of their greatest achievements, and they have never figured out a way to pay for it.
I do hope that they're able to, you know, bring these conversations around to some of the entitlements and some of the serious spending. But to your point, yeah, why can't we have conversations about even what RFK Jr. is doing, you know, with MAHA, Making America Healthy? There are conversations that need to be had there. Even the autism discussion, which I think got manipulated last week, because you look at the numbers of kids that were diagnosed decades ago compared to now, it's confusing, right? What the hell is going on there? That needs to be discussed.
I totally agree that it should. And I will tell you one thing that I've rethought a little bit. I was in New York City when Michael Bloomberg years ago wanted to have the tax on sugary sodas. And, you know, I was like, oh, government, stay out of our way. Let me just make our choices. I do think that, you know, given our obesity rates, given the spending on medicine, I'm torn between wanting people to have the liberty to live their own lives and make their own choices, and like, how do we respond when people are clearly making bad choices?
Well, I think we respond with a magic pill. That's what we've discovered here, a couple of them in the last couple of years. Peter, thanks a lot. I appreciate coming on here on this Monday.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Audio cut of the day is coming up next.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Hass avocados or mangoes, 4 for $5 or $1.25 each. Signature Farms boneless, skinless chicken breasts or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And enjoy an exclusive digital deal on Sargento shredded or sliced cheeses. 5 to 8 ounce selected varieties, $1.97 each, limit 4. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Esa-Pekka Salonen's final concerts as music director of the San Francisco Symphony bring legendary artists and epic music to Davies Symphony Hall, culminating in Mahler's electrifying Second Symphony. Tickets at sfsymphony.org.
Audio cut of the day coming up here in just a minute. I do want to spend a little time just because I mentioned it passively earlier in the show because I was talking about this Gilgo Beach documentary, and I've watched 2 episodes of that on Netflix. I'm going to finish it tonight. But I did take time to watch the Netflix documentary on Oklahoma City and the bombing, and that's quite something, and it's sad, and it makes you angry, and it takes you back to that time period. Look, I was, you know, that was Saturday was the anniversary, 30 years. I was on the radio on KFRU in Columbia, Sioux, with the legendary Art Bell, because he did a show on KFRU, and we were, I think at the time, kind of introducing him to the audience to a certain extent. And I had this little monitor that had CNN on, and I looked up, and then we saw the image of the Murrah building, and then everything changed. And that was one of the crazier days I've ever had, you know, in media, just talking about that terrible situation. And then, you know, in the documentary, you're reminded about all these little kids that were in the daycare.
Oh, it's terrible.
That bomb was so powerful. It just blew everything away. And one of the things that I didn't remember, and I don't even know how many people would remember this, but they're clearing debris. They're trying to make sure that people are rescued who might be buried in the rubble. They don't know who's in there. There's one woman that they know she's in there. They kind of can hear her. And at one point, somebody touches her hand. But then there's one of the experts that's on the scene. They look up until like the 8th floor, wherever the ATF was, and they see this other bomb up there. So they clear everyone out. They have to walk away from people that they're trying to save. Well, it ended up being nothing. It was something that the ATF used in investigations to, you know, it was a fake bomb, essentially. But they didn't know that at the time, so they clear everyone out. Everyone's moving back from, you know, the bombing site, and then they had to move back in. There may have been lives that were lost because of that.
I was on Kix 104.1, and we were doing a morning show, and I had gone to school at University of Tulsa in Oklahoma.
Right. Yeah.
So we had somebody on from that area. I feel like it was the first of these major incidents, you know?
Well, we had the space shuttle. We obviously had the O.J. Simpson trial, but that was absolutely, because it was the biggest terror attack up until, you know, 9/11 on our soil.
Exactly.
And just... And I'll have to say that the filmmakers had to do what they had to do, but they do feature some of the audio interviews with Tim McVeigh, who's just an evil, evil person. You know, one of the other things they didn't realize at the time was, and there were reporters that put this together, that it was on the same day as, you know, what happened with Waco with David Koresh, and that was on purpose, obviously,
The
anniversary. But I would recommend that. That's a really, really good documentary. I think as far as quality of documentary, I wouldn't put it in the top tier, but still an important story, and people should check that out. All right, we got to do this here this afternoon.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
I'm just going to go with Senator Eric Schmidt. Eric was on earlier with Martha McCallum talking about the left's new hero, the gangbanger Abrego Garcia.
The stupidity has no end, I guess. I can't believe that these Democrats are lining up to go down to a foreign country to visit a guy who was here illegally, a criminal, an MS-13 member who beat his wife. I mean, you can't be more plain than that. That's who this is. So I think all along, Martha, they were looking for some example of something President Trump would do that was so bad that they could rally behind. I can't believe that they're that stupid that this is the guy.
Yeah, he's the poster child.
They've totally bought into this concept that borders don't mean anything, that we're all world citizens, everybody has a right to be here, and nobody should ever have to leave. And that's just not what our laws entail. That's not what it means to be a sovereign country. So I think they're headed further into political oblivion with moves like this.
I do not have a prediction on where this story might take us. I mean, I think I closed the show on Friday, and I might be down with this still. I'd love for Trump and J.D. Vance to fly down there, pop that guy out of that prison, give him a little caviar and champagne or a margarita to come back here, and then kick his ass out again, because there really is only one thing that could potentially happen here. But the Democrats thinking that this is the issue that's going to vault them back into, you know, I don't know what they're thinking. Because, again, I mentioned earlier, Rasmussen's got to pull out. 79% of people in this country are pretty okay with kicking people out of the country who, A, are not citizens to begin with, and, oh, B, also commit crimes when they're here when they're not supposed to be citizens. Doesn't seem that complicated, but, of course, there's due process arguments. I'm not a sharp legal mind, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great night. We'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.
If you love your customers, you have to try RingCentral. No matter the size of your business, every call, every text, every meeting, every customer conversation matters. With RingCentral, you get a reliable business phone, a modern contact center, and built-in AI across every conversation, so you can focus on the moments that matter. See for yourself at ringcentral.com.
RingCentral, intelligent communications you can trust.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.